Good morning, human beings of the realms beyond the great sea. It is August the 7th, 2019. All of those people who seek some sort of satisfaction will be denied. Yeah, so it's August the 7th, 2019. It's Wednesday, it's 5 a.m., and yeah, what can I tell you? I know I've been a bit remiss in podcasting, and you might say, well, Dan, what the fuck? I pay 50 cents a year. I deserve all your time. I would say to you what I basically said on my Minds channel the other day, my Minds thread. I can't believe I'm on social media again. And frankly, that almost went awry. I joined a group I probably shouldn't have joined. Not bad people, but just the wrong group. They wanted to have banal conversations about really funny memes that amount to absolutely nothing. And I love humor, as many of you might well know, but my humor usually comes with an edge, a razor-sharp edge, and if you are at all aware of your surroundings as a human being, then sometimes my humor can be a little bit too close to the cut, right? But it is what it is, yeah. So I was commenting on Minds about time, since I mentioned time, what time it is. And here's the deal. If you see the world the way I do, and this is not a new thing. In fact, arguably, this is probably the core reason why my ex-wife dumped me. But if you see the world the way I do, whenever it happens, whenever that can of food, that can of chili called our current paradigm goes bad, I can tell you that if you turn the can over called our current paradigm, we are already way past the sell-by date. And if you look at the use-by date, we're a couple fucking decades past that. And so, yeah, I see bulges on the can. And if you have an old, you know, can of chili that has bulges, you probably shouldn't eat it because of this thing called botulism. But yeah, I would say that our current reality is basically on borrowed time. Now, that does not imply the world is coming to an end. But it could imply that a lot of people's personal worlds could come to an end at about the same time. Some people call that a calamity, and in truth it is, but these things happen throughout history. You know, if you lived in the middle of the 14th century, no one would blame you if you thought the world was coming to an end. And let me be more specific. If you lived in Europe during the 14th century, the middle of it, in the 1340s and 50s, no one would blame you during the Black Plague, during the Hundred Years' War, during the Schism of the Church, during the, frankly, some of the final attacks of the various Mongolian Khanates, but also the beginning of the first Turkish invasion. My point is simply this. If during that time of great strangeness and chaos, you said the world was coming to an end, I don't think anyone would blame you. But the world did not end. And about 100 years later, you have the beginning of the Renaissance. Now, does that mean that all is well? No. By the end of that century, half the people that had been alive were dead, or the population was cut in half. And it took several centuries later to make up the losses. I think it took a few hundred years. So I should say it took a few hundred years more to make up the difference. But yeah, I've had a feeling probably since I was a little kid that, you know, whatever make-believe reality the TV was telling us, it didn't match the actual reality we experience on a daily basis. And I gotta say, the weather patterns, the climate, everything about living in Western Washington in 2019 compared to, let's say, 1979, when I was 9 years old, it's not the same, folks. These blue skies you're seeing where you can barely see 5 miles, yeah, those aren't really blue skies. Those are cloudless skies with a lot of aerosol matter in the skies, okay? A lot of fucking particulate matter, and it ain't all fucking pollen, dude. In fact, probably a lot of that shit is coming from fires, and probably from other sources. I don't want to get into Dane Wigington and geoengineering, because that's frankly a really depressing fucking topic. And it only makes things worse. Added to the fact that I finished reading this paper, and let me read the title, because you're going to love the title of this fucking paper. Understanding the Permafrost Hydrate System and Associated Methane Releases in the East Siberian Arctic Shelf. And the top name on the paper is Natalia Shakova, ostensibly Dr. Natalia Shakova of the University of Alaska, along with Mr. Semilyatov and Yevgeny Chuvilin. But I'm focusing on Shakova because her name is the name that comes up. She was on the top. So this paper basically describes this layer of material in the eastern Siberian Arctic shelf. And so to give you some preface, it's early and I need more coffee. Yeah, folks. It's hard for me to podcast, okay? I do not like Willy Wonka's. I like my team. I know this is a tangent, but I just have to go with this tangent before I continue on the fucking alarming fucking Shakova paper. The only thing that keeps me at Willy Wonka's right now is that I more or less like the people I'm working with. And that's a very unstable situation, because that doesn't mean we're friends. It just means they don't discuss me. In fact, for the most part, the core people I work with are pretty qualified people. And so I don't go to work thinking to myself, fuck, if something goes wrong, everyone else there won't know what they're doing. It's the opposite. I go to work and frankly, I'm on a team where pretty much everybody has a pretty good solution ready to go when there's a problem. So this is a good team. I hate Willy Wonka's. I hate Willy's. And as I've told you, I call it Willy's. Its name is not really Willy's, but I don't want to use its real name because that could get me fired. But yeah, I don't really love Willy's. Willy's kind of sucks. It's filled with a lot of fucking corporate propaganda. It's kind of a terrible company, but they're all kind of terrible. They're all terrible, okay? That's my reality. And I tried to get a construction job this last winter, and perhaps if I go through retirement again, which means I'm between jobs but with some money set aside, I might wheel back on getting into construction. Because, yeah, you could say, Dan, what the fuck? You have a couple college degrees and you can program computers. Folks, I don't know what fucking make-believe reality you bought into. I live in Seattle, Washington. I have 3 degrees and I'm a pretty competent computer programmer. And if you're asking me, can I get a fucking job? Holy fuck. In 2011 and 2012, every time a Willy Wonka recruiter would call me, especially after the Amalga experience, and I gave away too much there, every time a Willy Wonka recruiter would call me, I would use at least 50 fucking F-bombs. And yet they never stopped calling me. Now, does that mean I'm special? Or does that mean shit's pretty much falling apart? Folks, here's the deal about social promotion, multiculturalism, necessary STEM workers from India, China, and Russia, and other forms of fucking reality. I don't care where you go on planet Earth. Not everybody is created equal when it comes to problem solving. And in point of fact, a person who's really terrible at problem solving can create a whole bunch of extra work that's totally fucking unnecessary. Simply put, I work for a company that practices social promotion. So a lot of the fucking code out there is shit code, folks. And it's only getting shittier. And the more that social promotion is pushed over actual competency, the shittier the code gets. And if you think AI is going to save you from that, you need to factor this, you stupid fuck. AI, the teams that do AI work, places at places like Willy's. Willy's got a big AI lab. The people that do this work are also in environments where social promotion is practiced and this general type of naive multiculturalist bullshit. So, folks, this is a simple reality. I don't give a fuck if they fire me. I really don't. As of today, I've put aside enough money, enough cash, enough this and that to survive for at least maybe 6 to 8 months. And in my hobo reality, that's like hobo eternity, because I do not think the future holds that much for any of us when it comes to normality. It does not mean the world's coming to an end. It just means the normal shit ain't going to be normal. And I know this tangent was a big tangent, but I just needed to explain. If I'm not doing a lot of podcasts, it's because this fucking job, which is necessary, because I don't want to be fucking homeless. I don't want to die in the streets quite yet. This job drains the fucking life out of me. And yeah, you could say, well, Dan, all of our jobs drain the life out of me. But I go to my doctor and get my prescription for Flimulax, and it fucking makes me happy and also gives me strange thoughts about, I don't know, picking up a hammer and maybe hitting somebody in the head. But hey, it's Flimulax, and that's on the label. I don't give a fuck how you get through your fucking day. And I don't give a fuck what kind of speeches you want to give me. The reality is this. When I do my job as a computer programmer, I try to do it well, which means that it just uses up all my fucking creative energy. And then you add to the fact that I have to listen to a lot of Seattle nonsense to and from work on the fucking bus. And I gotta listen to a lot of upside down thinking at Willy Wonka's every fucking day of the week. I mean, it's in the hallways, people having upside down, sideways conversations about shit that doesn't matter, and frankly, from perspectives that are completely inane. So yeah, tell me again about all the podcasts I'm not giving you. Anyways, I got a little bit angry. The point is, this wonderful Shacoba paper, I just finished reading it. And let me give you a basic summary. Actually, before I give you the summary, I'm going to read the abstract. Abstracts are relatively short, so you'll enjoy it. This is the abstract from the paper, headlining the chief author being Dr. Natalia Shacoba, University of Alaska. And once again, the title of the paper is Understanding the Permafrost Hydrate System and Associated Methane Releases in the East Siberian Arctic Shelf. Okay, that's a wonderful title. Let me read the abstract. This paper summarizes current understanding of the processes that determine the dynamics of the subsea permafrost hydrate system existing in the largest, shallowest shelf in the Arctic Ocean, the East Siberian Arctic Shelf. We review key environmental factors and mechanisms that determine formation, current dynamics, and thermal state of subsea permafrost, mechanisms of its destabilization, and rates of its thawing. A full section of this paper is devoted to this topic. Another important question regards the possible existence of permafrost-related hydrates at shallow ground depth, and in the shallow shelf environment. We review the history of and earlier insights about the topic, followed by an extensive review of experimental work to establish the physics of shallow Arctic hydrates. We also provide a principal simplified scheme explaining the normal and altered dynamics of the permafrost hydrate system as glacial, interglacial climate epochs alternate. We also review specific features of methane releases determined by the current state of the subsea permafrost system and possible future dynamics. This review presents methane results obtained in the ESAS, that's East Siberian Arctic Shelf, during two periods, 1994 to the year 2000 and 2003 to 2017. A final section is devoted to discussing future work that is required to achieve an improved understanding of the subject. So, I read the paper, and there's a couple things. Number one, The paper itself, like most scientific papers, is not necessarily... I'm going to put the paper aside here. The paper itself, like most properly written scientific papers, doesn't necessarily come out and say anything specifically alarming. It does and it doesn't. I would suggest anybody with a competent scientific background and is interested in their own future to read that fucking paper, if you're interested. But the bottom line is this. There is enough methane stored in a kind of semi-stable form underneath the Arctic Ocean that if the temperature increases too much in the Arctic Ocean, which means temperature, pressure, salinity, and geology, these are the four things that basically impact how this methane is stored in what the author of the paper, Dr. Shakova, calls the hydrate stability zone. Essentially, this is a zone within the permafrost, under the water, and I think also within the permafrost on land that is relatively stable for keeping methyl hydrates from releasing or sublimating into the atmosphere. This is good because according to many estimates, there is way more than enough methane in the Arctic, around the Arctic Circle, under the Arctic Ocean, to cook the Earth many times over. Methane is many hundreds of times more of a greenhouse gas than CO2 over a 10-year period. And one of the main points of the paper is that these releases of methane, rather than being gradual and easy for the general system to sort of deal with, because methane does break down. In fact, according to Dr. Shakova, they can be abrupt and they can be quite large releases. In fact, she believes, and there are people like her that believe, that a many gigaton methane burst from the Arctic Sea is really going to happen any day now. And I've talked about this in other podcasts, and I decided to read the paper, and the science seems sound. But here's the thing. I'm also a Christian. So even though I think the science of this is really sound, and even though within a certain cosmology, this sounds pretty terrible, I'm not entirely sure this is something I should worry about. Now, that's hard because I really do get twisted up. The weather, the environment, the things around me do not seem normal. But I'm not really sure that implies that some giant fart is going to occur and that's it for the human race, because I just don't know how that aligns with the Bible. I will tell you, though, I have this scary thought that what will happen is that there will be some crisis, and this could very well be it. Like, frankly speaking, this is the kind of event in terms of natural history that would classify as an extinction-level event, the rapid release of methane from the Arctic Circle. That would basically cook us. Within a year, the temperatures would be unlivable. Within a couple years, probably we would be in a minor version of Venus syndrome. And that's bad enough. You know, there'd be pretty much almost no life except for extremophores. An extremophore, and if you don't know what an extremophore is a life form that can live on the extremes of environment. For example, there are life forms that live around these sulfur vents, at the bottom of the ocean. They're kind of extremophores. There are bacteria that live very deep in the earth. They are extremophores. There are all sorts of extremophores. There are bacteria that can live at very high altitude. They would also be considered extremophores. So there are extremophores, and if the earth becomes a polluted wasteland, no doubt there'll be those little earwig creatures, like in the Wrath of Khan, that will crawl into your ear and drive you crazy. But the evergreen trees and the ravens and the deer and the elk and the salmon and obviously the orca whale, they will all be gone in that kind of world. But the thing that occurred to me as a Christian, like if I take off my scientific hat worrying about the great fart, and that's what I'm calling it, this release of 50 gigatons of methane all at once from the Eastern Siberian Arctic Shelf, I'm going to call it the Great Fart. But other than worrying about the great fart, the other concern I would have is what if some dude, man or woman, because honestly, I don't know what this person would be, according to prophecy, but what if some person arrives on the world stage and says, folks, the big fart is coming? Of course they won't call it the big fart. That wouldn't be dignified. But they'll come out and say, the great fart is coming, and I have the great fart solution. And the great fart solution will save us. And the reason why this worries me is because that would mark that we're in the end times. Absolutely. That would be truly a mark. That would be like one of those things where unless you're completely fucking oblivious as a Christian. I know there are atheists who won't get it, and you know, I pray for atheists because I was one most of my life. But yeah, if some person comes along and says, I have the solution, and what's worse, if this person also looks to be aspiring for political power, because you can tell with these people what their real goal is. And if it's obvious that they really do want to have some type of political power, then yeah, I think that's probably a sign that we're in Revelations. Anyways, I know that that's a horrible way to start a podcast, to talk about my job and podcasting and how it's wearing me down to shit and this fucking Shkova paper. I think if you have any background in geology, geophysics, or basically science, you should read this paper. I don't find anything wrong with it. I do think you could argue that she could be wrong, that these massive methane releases are just not going to occur. But I really don't know if we should be wagering on that, you know? And I've already told you guys that from a evil solution perspective, if the evil people running the world truly believe that the Earth's temperature was becoming uncontrollable, then there would be very few solutions for them at that point other than nuclear winter. And I gotta say, nuclear winter or triggering some calderas, which are these massive supervolcanoes, or both. Like, set an H-bomb underneath the fucking Yellowstone, start a nuclear war, flood the atmosphere with all sorts of aerosols, lower the Earth's temperature drastically, maybe even a little ice age. That keeps the methane from going anywhere, at least, hopefully. But I mean, come on. I don't know. That would be terrible. 9119, folks. 9119. That is a strange, strange, scary number. 9119 is 911 both directions. On September the 1st, 2019, on September the 1st, 2019, there will be a massive conflagration in the sky. This day, 9119, will mark the great release of methane from the East Siberian Arctic Shelf. There will be a radio call from a ship at sea. It'll be Morse code. They'll be saying, oh my God. Captain of the Grumulus will tell us that a giant bulbous of methane had been released. His ship was sinking rapidly. All buoyancy has been lost. All lives will be lost. Oh yeah, God have mercy on our souls. Yeah, so 9119 is a date that has me freaked out a little bit because of its weird symmetry. And I have a strange psychological theory, or at least a general way of dealing with doom bullshit. My theory goes like this. If there's a date that comes along that freaks me out now, that has a weird tension to it, I will put it on the table. That way, if it's in an email or on a blog posting or in some fucking podcast, the NSA scans it, it goes into their fucking computer, it tells whatever fucktard is planning some kind of bullshit, nefarious bullshit false flag on September the 1st, 2019, to fucking stop that project because some bozo in Little Saigon, Seattle knows what you're gonna do. Yeah, so. I don't know. I don't know if anything's happening on 9119, but it is weird that it is 911 both directions. It just is 911. And that extra 9, I don't know. I don't know. And frankly, September the 19th, 2019, doesn't have the same feel to it. It doesn't really have that same kind of symmetry. There's a kind of symmetry in 9119. It doesn't exist in any of the other numbers. So I don't know what's happening, but next topic. So, I've been joking with people about, you know, various things. I try not to talk about religion at work because that can only get me in trouble. But I've been joking with people at work about various things, and I talked to them about Chip the Dog. Chip the Dog. Chip the Dog will be designed by Boston Robotics. It will be available for the U.S. government in the year 2024. Yeah, so Chip the Dog is a Boston Robotics dog that the U.S. government will deploy in the year 2024. And Chip the Dog will have a RFID transponder chip dispenser in its mouth. And it will kind of look like a dog. It won't really be cuddly, but it'll basically wander about. And if you're not chipped, it will come up to you and basically... it will just bite you. And then you'll be chipped, and it will go find the next person that's not chipped. Now, you could say Chip the Dog sounds fucked up, Dan. There's no way my government would do that to me. And folks, I was having arguments like this when I did debate in high school back in the 80s. Like, people would say, well, the government would never do this, Dan. The government would never read our mail. The government would never... you know, produce propaganda or pay journalists to fucking lie to us, Dan. Are you kidding me? Just read The Economist and, you know, and read the fucking Foreign Affairs and all the proper journals when you give that fucking extemporaneous speech. And what I'm telling you, folks, is that the government will lie to you, or I call it the crocodile. Crocodile equals government, folks. Willy Wonka's equals a company you don't know about, but crocodile equals government. And yes, the crocodile will lie to you. And if Chip the Dog, a Boston Robotics dog that could dispense RFID transponder chips and some other kind of fucked up, you know, maybe even a fucking vaccination, folks, Chip the Dog does two things. Yeah, so Chip the Dog does two things. Chip the Dog will bite you and implant a transponder RFID chip, but at the same time, Chip the Dog will vaccinate you for the 78 known things that the pharmaceutical companies say you need to be vaccinated for every 32 days. Yeah. Chip the fucking Dog. And you could say, well, Dan, you're crazy. You could say you're insane, Dan. And you could say there's no way they'd have Chip the Dog. Yeah, well, I think Chip the Dog is coming. Yeah, Chip the Dog is coming. Anyways. Oh, I already talked about this bullshit. I'm gonna cross it off and not mention it again. Oh, yeah, so I think if you're on Minds, because I'm on Minds, and I put that link on my fucking SoundCloud thingy. I think I need to start writing again, and I may do it as kind of like a chapter-by-chapter series on Minds. I don't know if I'll publish it to Minds directly or just put the links to PDFs for each chapter. But maybe I'll just put it directly in Minds. I haven't decided yet. They have that blog feature. Maybe I'll take advantage of it and create a blog around the story concept. But I have a few story concepts, one of which is called The Iron Republic. And this one is actually, remember folks, I'm cosmologically agnostic, but it's based upon a story that was written 100 years ago about some dude that claimed he found a way to an outer realm on the Great Plain. So in this guy's cosmology, the Earth is not a sphere, it's a flat Earth, and he found a way to the outer plane through the Great Ice Wall, blah, blah, blah. And he found a way to a place called the Iron Republic. And so I was thinking about doing a series called The Iron Republic based upon that. Folks, I'm not endorsing flat Earth, okay? I am not a flat earther. I am cosmologically agnostic. You want to prove to me the Earth is an oblate spheroid? Take me up in a fucking spaceship. And since I'm almost 50 years old, and you've been promising me, and I say you, I mean the technological god that everyone worships except for me, you've been promising me fucking space travel every 10 fucking years of my life since the 1970s. For everybody. And it hasn't happened yet. And they get all fucking excited if Virgin Galactic can take them up to the fucking Kármán line, which is only about 50 fucking miles up. Folks, supposedly, we went to the moon, which is a quarter of a million miles away. We went to the moon a few times in the late 60s and early 70s. So one of them would be the Iron Republic, and the other one, which would basically be a sci-fi series that deals with simulation theory, and that one would be called Language of the Ancient Masters. And I just haven't decided. I also have this weird Santa Claus story that I kind of want to publish as a chapter by chapter too. But the problem is, it's a little bit religious, and people, I gotta tell you, people get all fucking pissed off when it comes to religion these days. Oh yeah, by the way, I'm getting baptized on Sunday. Yeah, I'm getting baptized on Sunday. Yeah, so I'm getting baptized on Sunday. I don't know why I mentioned this, it's random, but yes, I'm getting baptized. But yeah, so I'm going to try to start doing some more writing again, and maybe I'll publish The Minds, and maybe I'll use their blog feature. I thought about turning on my blog again, but my blog has been shut down for a reason. I like to write, but the blog became a kind of thing that, I don't know, but then it all becomes a kind of thing. And the fucking SoundCloud shit. And I don't have so many followers, nor do I make so much money off of SoundCloud, that I really spend a lot of time thinking to myself, fuck. On the other hand, when I got a few loyal followers asking me for fucking podcasts, I gotta say what? And fuck. Yeah, so what the fuck. Anyways, next topic. So there are a lot of people out there, and this is a bit cycling back on the environment, but I'm okay with it. There are a lot of people out there who say, Dan, why don't you start running again? And I want to tell you something, folks. In the summertime, frankly, all year round, but in the summertime, especially in Seattle these days, because there's a new normal. The new normal is you didn't used to need fucking air conditioning in Western Washington. Oh, I'm sorry. You do now sometimes. Anyways, someone suggested, why don't you go running in Seattle? And folks, I'm going to keep this real fucking simple for this topic, so we don't have to spend a lot of goddamn time on it, right? I think running in the Seattle area this time of year is probably as bad as smoking two packs of cigarettes a day. Like, if you go running 2 miles in this shit, you might as well get two packs of fucking nasty ass Camels or fucking Marlboros and sit on the fucking stoop with your fucking Colt 45 and smoke away. That's how clean the air is. Folks, I've got a little layer of residue on the ledge of in my apartment because I can't keep the window closed. Holy fuck. This is not Seattle in 1970 fucking nine. And I have to keep it closed during my podcast. Oh boy. I get a little miniature experience of the greenhouse effect. The point is, my place is heating up right now, and so that's a way of telling me this podcast must end soon. But when the windows open, I get a layer of residue, this nasty, black and brown, gross, disgusting residue. And it's from concrete dust, and it's from automobiles, and frankly, probably from some other places. You know, when you're living on the fifth floor. So no, I don't think I'll be running 2 miles in Seattle, at least not during June, July, or August. And it's possible that I might, you know, in September. I think a lot of people have notions of health that are upside down. It's kind of like the no-fat diet. That was sold to me when I was a kid. Like, if you want to get healthy, you have to eliminate all fat. But actually, that was really terrible fucking advice. I'm not saying I'm keto, but fucking carbohydrates will fry your system. I don't care if they're simple or complex. They will fry your system, okay? Humans did not evolve to eat apples all day. That is actually the reality we find ourselves in. We evolved and we more or less sort of survived in an environment that was, you know, kind of, it was hard to find food. That's a nice way of putting it. And we were not going to be picky eaters, okay? So yeah, I don't know. Go run 2 miles if you want to in this fucking grossness. The fucking air is gross as fuck. I don't know. The next topic... Yeah, the next topic might be the last one for this podcast. I don't know. So you all know I'm an anarchist and a Christian, and I was in a group discussion on Minds a few days ago where one person got kind of upset that I was a Christian and an anarchist. And all I can tell you is this. On planet Earth, I have no Lord. If that's confusing, I'm sorry, but I know it confuses some people. I do have a Lord in heaven. On planet Earth, I have no king, but I do have a king in heaven. Now, I tell people, read 1 Samuel chapter 8. I tell people this because they need to read 1 Samuel chapter 8 and understand that the Hebrews made the wrong fucking choice. They were told the truth, and like so many apostasies, like so many abandonments of faith, like so many covenants broken, the Hebrews were given a choice. You can have your Lord God in heaven, or you can have yourself your own on the earth, secular, temporal king. But here's what the king's going to do to you. The king's going to steal your shit. The king's going to ruin your life. And on that day you realize that, don't come crying to me. I basically summarized God's response to the fucking Hebrews. You want a fucking king? I am your king. If you don't want me, you need to know that your earthly king, no matter how great a king he is, and folks, you need to read about David and Solomon, because they were the two of the big hitters, like two of the great kings. And frankly, they made a lot of fucking mistakes too, and they hurt a lot of people along the way. So the bottom line is this. God's being honest. He's telling people, if you want a king, don't come crying to me. Now, I went off on that tangent because I just want to let you guys know, yes, I'm a Christian. Yes, I'm an anarchist. I see no contradiction. It worries me that there are anarchists who do. Like, that worries me. It makes me, it's kind of like the communist anarchists, the fucking Venus Project doofuses, or the fucking crypto anarchists who think fucking Bitcoin's going to save them. Folks, anarchism means one thing only. To build relationships within a community without the use of force. That's it. No government, no armies, no cops. Does that mean we don't solve problems? Actually, I think we'll solve more problems in that world, and we'll avoid creating them in a lot of cases by avoiding the fucking crocodile, aka government. But if you think because a person has faith that that's the equivalent of government, then I think you're confused. And I'll even go further. If you think you can have a free society without virtue, and I'm not saying you have to have Christian virtue, but if you believe you can have a free society without some virtue, I think you're also insane. Just as insane as the people who keep voting, believing that that works. Now, the topic of this is not really what we just discussed, but this is what I want to get at. When a person comes to me and says, Dan, you're an anarchist, how are you going to change the world? And this is my response now, because it's kind of critical. Changing the world at this point, and let's just be more specific. Let's say enough of us in Washington State are just sick and tired of what we've done to the Puget Sound, to the ecosystem. We're tired of the fact that we've turned the Puget Sound into a very large toilet bowl, a very loud, noisy, large toilet bowl, that we're kind of pissed off that the orca whales are dying or leaving, and probably mostly dying, that the salmon runs are drying up, that they are dying, that the ocean looks like it's kind of dying. It really does. The smell. When I wait for the bus some of these days, when the sun really heats up that water out there, that nasty fume smell, that's not the smell of an ocean. That's the smell of a graveyard. So I would love to reverse that. It's not going to get changed by one person. One person like me, by myself, is not going to change that. It's also not likely that everybody joins some cause to fix things. So let me start there. If your philosophy requires a magical individual, like a Hitler or a Superman or a Walt Disney or a fucking Satoshi, if your philosophy requires a magical individual to make the world better, then you're really confused. Also, if your philosophy requires everybody to do the same thing, or nobody does it, then you're really dangerously fucking confused. We don't need one magical person to change the world. We also don't need everybody to agree to change the world. We just need enough people to change the world. You want to know how an anarchist wants to change the world? It's by convincing people, not by pointing guns at them. If you have a solution to the environmental crisis or to some economic question that involves pointing a gun at somebody, I think you're flawed in your reasoning. I really do. There is no, you might win the argument the same way a crocodile in the outback would beat me at chess simply by eating me. That's true. You'll win the argument that way, but you don't actually win. We don't need everybody to fix the situation in the Puget Sound. We just need enough people. Now, how am I going to do that? I don't know. Frankly, I was almost homeless 6 months ago, and I'm getting baptized on Sunday. So I'm kind of making progress at the pace I'm capable of right now. But I'm just not sure how much time we got left. You know, I don't know what the future looks like, but the oceans, they look sick. They really do. And that's kind of a big deal. It really is, folks. Next thing about this. A lot of people, when they talk about anarchism, they say, well, Dan, how can you have anarchism if people aren't perfect? Folks. Anarchism is not about perfection. It's about recognizing people are not perfect. Now, I do believe principles like the non-aggression principle are critical to anarchism, but it's not about perfection. None of us are perfect. I make mistakes all the time. In fact, if I were ever to write a book about my life, it would be, you know, how to fuck up and not die. But beyond that, I mostly feel like I make mistakes. But there are some things we can avoid. We can avoid using force against each other. We can avoid victimizing each other. We can avoid stealing from each other. Even in this upside-down crocodile prison state reality called the United States of America, we can still avoid being predators on each other. We may not be able to avoid the crocodile. We really can't. I can't. I have to work for one of the crocodile's best fucking friends every fucking day of the work week. But we can at least avoid victimizing each other. That is still a choice. So that's kind of how I want to, like, cap this out, folks. If you want to, like, underline it, highlight it, put big quotation marks around it, it's really this fucking simple, folks, when it comes to anarchism and changing the world. Firstly, you don't do it through force. That's not the way you solve a problem. You don't use guns to fucking build a home. You use tools, you use hammers, you use saws. You don't use guns to do that. Secondly, we don't need everybody on planet Earth to change behavior, to save the Earth. We don't. And if your philosophy is based upon that, then you will likely end up using guns to force people to do shit, or you'll simply kill them. We don't need everybody. We also don't need magical individuals. We just need enough people. Okay? Enough people voluntarily changing the way they live to change the world. And last but not least, we don't need perfect people, because those people don't exist. But we do need good people. We need more good people. And good people are not perfect, but they desire to live a life of virtue. They look out for their fellow human being. They respect the dignity of their fellow human being. They defend concepts like free speech and free association. We need more good people. They respect the idea that bullies suck and that the non-aggression principle is really the basis of all decent human relationships. We need more good people, not magical perfect people that don't exist and then turn out to be fucking sociopaths. So anyways, on this Wednesday, August the 7th, 2019, I will say to all of you that 9-1-1-9 is coming. 9-1-1-9 is on the horizon. At 10 a.m. on September the 1st, 2019, a message was received from a jet airplane flying near the Arctic Circle. It was Morse code. It was captain of the airliner Fordiev 78 from Aeroflot, Captain Mikhail Gubanov. His message outlined the release of a massive methane blombulus. The blombulus was over 200 miles in diameter, but he could see the curves of its convexiture. Its convex shape, like a large booby pointing up towards the sky. A methane blombulus was to be released. It was at least going to be 50 gigatons, maybe 200 gigatons. Nine one one nine, folks. 9-1-1-9. And have a great day.